from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Welcome back into the Insiders here on ESPN 1320. I am James Hamm. Joining me, Chris Biederman from the Sacramento Bee and the Candlestick Chronicles, which is a spectacular 49ers podcast.
Spectacular.
Spectacular.
Wow. Which, I appreciate that.
Which Chris shares with our friend Kyle Madsen, who is, of course, on vacation in jolly old England. And he actually was in the chat at some point today, which I hope that he's not in the chat too much, because Kyle and his lovely wife need to enjoy England and their bad weather and bad food.
I'm going to refrain from commenting on the food in the UK, but I will say the weather is probably not as good as parts of California.
Yeah, what are we looking at today? It's 68 degrees and sunny and gorgeous here.
Yes.
This is a perfect day to take a very long walk. Chris, you are known not just for your coverage of the Sacramento Kings and your hatred for Domantas Sabonis. You are also, just kidding, you are also known for your work covering the San Francisco 49ers. And like, if we're going to have you here, we got to talk Niners, especially during the offseason. There's been a lot of movement, man. What's your takeaway so far?
I think it's been a pretty good offseason. Like, I think the offseasons get harder and harder the better your team is, because you have more highly paid guys and you have to, you know, you're under more strict, or you're under stronger financial constrictions to put a good team together. But ultimately, this is the offseason of, one, no quarterback controversy, which is a breath of fresh air for the first time since 2019, really. Like, does it? It's nice to know that we don't have to talk about Brock Purdy coming back for an injury or what Trey Lance means. Does Trey Lance still have a shot to be the starting guy?
Or Jimmy Garoppolo?
Or Jimmy Garoppolo warming up on the side field at training camp, and then ultimately becoming the backup? Like, it's Brock Purdy's job, so the 49ers have some stability there, and they still have Brock Purdy on that rookie contract, which pays him less than $1 million, which is, I think, inarguably the biggest bargain in the entire NFL. Mm-hmm. But what that means is the 49ers have money to give out elsewhere, and then, you know, Brandon Ayuk is obviously the guy that the 49ers have to take care of this offseason. Because if you're Brandon Ayuk's agent, there's no way you're reporting to training camp without a new contract and playing out the last year of your rookie contract, the fifth year option year, which pays you $14 million guaranteed, when he could potentially get twice that average on his next deal. The issue becomes, do you want to pay Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel $50 million combined? Well, the way NFL contracts work and the way a lot of 49ers contracts have worked is that they backload these deals. So when guys sign new contracts, their first cap, the first cap hit is $5, $6, $7, $8 million. And then as the contract matures, then those cap hits grow to the $28, $30, $32 million mark. So there's an opportunity for the 49ers to have Brandon Ayuk on another contract with Deebo Samuel currently on his contract, which is near the top of the market, and have those guys for 2024 and have it work totally fine. Beyond that, that's when things are going to get interesting. And this time next year, we are going to be talking about Deebo Samuel nonstop. It's going to be, do you trade Deebo Samuel? Do you try to sign him to an extension because he'll be entering the final year of his contract in 2025? Or do you draft his replacement? And that's what makes this year's draft interesting. Do the 49ers decide to take a receiver in a class that's highly regarded at the position to brace for the eventual departure of Deebo Samuel? Because in my opinion, I think Brandon Ayuk is staying no matter what. It's Deebo Samuel's future that is far more up in the air, in my opinion. So that's what makes this draft interesting, right? Like, I think, you know, there's a chance that the 49ers do what they always do and take a defensive lineman, whether it's an edge player or an interior guy, with their 31st overall pick. And maybe they identify somebody and trade up, or maybe they like someone early in round two and trade back and get more picks. But to me, the way free agency is shaken out, basically all the additions have been on defense. You know, Leonard Floyd, Devondre Campbell, Malik Collins, who they came in the trade from Houston to replace Eric Armstead. The 49ers have supplemented the roster on defense through free agency, and I think they're going to go heavy offense in the draft.
Okay.
And so does that mean it's offensive tackle? I'm a little dubious of offense. Like, I know a lot of people talk about this year's offensive line class being really good and really deep. I just don't know if any of these guys at the back end of the first round are going to be good football players who help you right away. I think there are a lot of those guys are projects, or a lot of the tackles who are expected to go at the back end of round one are probably better off at guard or center. And so to me, I wonder if, like, the 49ers are big on, like, this gold helmet prospect, right? A gold helmet guy is somebody, whether it's round one or round seven, it's a guy that you really believe in the person, like, who he is from a character standpoint. Like, Fred Warner, George Kittle, those are, like, gold helmet guys, right? Like, Talanoa Hufanga, guys, that's, like, what your philosophy is that allows you to be successful in round five. When you get Dre Greenlaw and Talanoa Hufanga and guys like that, you're looking for, like, special character guys who also have the traits that you like. So I wonder if, like, somebody like Jackson Powers, the center from, of course, I come on the radio and then the guy's name eludes me right away.
Center from Oregon?
The center from Oregon. Jackson Powers Johnson. I didn't want to call him Johnson, Jackson Powers. Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon, a center who some people think is a top 20 talent, but who might drop in the draft because of positional value. Would he be available at the back end of the first round? Would the 49ers jump to like 25 and go get a guy that they think could start right away and potentially be what Alex Mack was to Kyle Shanahan's offense? Because you look at where the 49ers have really been exploited in their biggest games, in the Super Bowls against the Chiefs, in the NFC Championship game against the Rams, it's interior of the offensive line.
Yeah, Philadelphia.
And Philadelphia, too.
Yeah.
So whether you have Jackson Powers Johnson play guard in the short term and then have him replace Jake Brendel, who's 31 years old, and on a very, you know, Jake Brendel, I think his cap hit is like $3 or $4 million. Maybe move Jake Brendel to right guard and have Jackson Powers Johnson play center. Maybe that's the upgrade you make along the offensive line. But if I were John Lynch, and I'm definitely not, but I would look hard if Jackson Powers Johnson is available at 24, 25, 26, and all it costs you is a third or fourth round pick to move up from 31 to get somebody who could be a high level starter from day one, I think you try to get that guy. Whereas a lot of these tackles just feel like projects, and the 49ers, given where their championship window is, I don't know that they have time to wait around on a project like, you know, Amarius Mims or Tyler Guyton, JC Latham, those guys. I just think that the 49ers need a plug-and-play guy who can start and play at a high level from the jump, and I think Jackson Powers Johnson is most likely to be that guy.
Okay. Yeah, so I like that idea because I've been asking for years, like, why aren't they addressing the problems on the offensive line? Even last year when Minnesota was giving away one of their starting guards midway through the season, you're like, why are they not jumping on this? Like, this is, you don't have the depth that you need. I also think that the 49ers probably need to do what you're saying right there. Like, go get a legitimate long-term, like, basically what they did when they did Mike Iapati. Yeah. Was it Davis?
Anthony Davis.
Yeah, when they went out and, you know, that one draft where they bulk up everywhere, you're like, oh, okay, this is how you build a team, right? But I also think that they do need to go find that tackle in the second round, the third round. Don't give up everything to move up because you're going to need that player as well, because it's not like Trent Williams is getting any younger, and it's not like your right tackle is a bona fide starter on a championship team. So you need to kind of do both. You do. You need to spend all your money on that side of the ball, it feels like.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you like Jordan Morgan from Arizona and you think he can be available with the 35th or 36th pick, maybe you move out of round one, get a third round pick or something like that.
Yeah.
And then draft him, because maybe you like him, but you don't like him at 31 and you can get more assets. There's also receiver, which I mentioned is interesting.
That would be wild.
It would be lot, but like somebody like Ladd McConkey, who aside from having the name Ladd McConkey,
Phil McConkey said, right?
Yeah. The receiver from Georgia, I think he could be really interesting because he has a lot of the skills that Kyle Shanahan covets in terms of run blocking, but also shiftiness. And like the 49ers haven't really had an elite slot receiver. And if they're going to lose Juwan Jennings after the season, maybe Ladd McConkey, somebody who can stick in the slot alongside Brandon Ayuk long term, and then would give you a replacement for Deebo Samuel, albeit with a very different skill set.
Okay. Yeah, all kinds of things going on. Just tons of things going on with the Niners. You know, I like this discussion. Maybe we'll dive back into this after the break. So we're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. I'm James. Chris Biederman filling in for Kyle Madsen today. We'll see you in just a minute.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the Insiders. Look at that. Chris likes the intro. This is all Kyle's music. You know that.
I saw Post Malone with Kyle last summer, and it was a joy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I could see Kyle like having a good time there.
Big Post Malone guy.
That and like him, and I could see him at a K-pop concert. And
He's been seen at K-pop concerts.
Yes, he is. He is a big K-pop guy. He's actually got me to listen to some K-pop. He also made me. Who did I have to? Schoolboy Q. I had to listen to the new Schoolboy Q. That didn't go over well.
Sure.
I mean, there was some stuff I was like, okay, this is interesting. I like the mix. This is okay. But other stuff, I'm like, okay, I can't deal with this. I just can't.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I have a. Kyle's mostly got good music taste, but I haven't hopped on the K-pop train with him.
Okay.
Just yet, but. You know, maybe one day he'll convince me.
I like it as intro music. I think it's cool.
Sure.
Yeah, I just don't know that I'm going to sit there and rock out all the time to it. You know what? We were going to jump into the good, the bad, and the ugly. We're going to push that back a segment because I like the Niners talk that we're going through right now. So we've talked about their need to bolster the offensive line. We also like this wide receiver thing that's hanging out there. We know that they're going to burn at least one third round pick on a running back because that's who they are and their soul. But don't they have a lot of draft picks this year?
I'd have to go back and look. Admittedly, given like being on Kings road trips, and all of those things, I have not been as locked in on 49ers stuff as I would like to be, but we do have the Google machine, and I know this is great radio. All right, so...
Oh, 10.
They have picks in round 1, 2, 3. They have 4 fourth-round picks, a 5th, 2 sixths, and a 7.
Okay, so what do you think... like, I don't have the chart. What do you think it would take to move from number 31 to, say, number 24, where you're talking about selecting somebody?
Well, they have 3 fourths, so I would start there, and you know, probably a couple of those mid-round picks, a couple of those day two picks.
Okay, so
early, maybe your third round pick, and maybe one of your fourth round picks.
Okay, that's what you think it would cost you.
Yeah, which I think, you know, look, like this isn't a team that is rebuilding. This is a team that's trying to win the Super Bowl next year. So, you know, given that the hit rate on a fourth round pick is probably 25% at best, like I would have no problem dealing any of those picks.
Yeah, and you also have a very packed roster already.
Yeah,
like I mean, this isn't there. There's no room for 10 picks to make the 2024 San Francisco 49ers squad.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like that, all of their starters on offense are back. Right, the only additions that they've made really on offense, they got Josh Dobbs to play backup quarterback. And Brandon Parker to potentially compete for the swing tackle job. So, you know, and Patrick Taylor potentially to play running back, even though, you know, they have Christian McCaffrey and Elijah Mitchell and Jordan Mason. So, like,
okay,
they brought back John Feliciano, obviously, but all their starters that just got them to the Super Bowl are still there. Jawan Jennings, they tendered. So,
yeah.
But they do need, to your point, there aren't really any starting jobs up in the air. Maybe. I don't think maybe if you draft a corner in the first round and then you move Diamador Lenore inside full time, maybe that's how you draft a starter. I just don't know, like aside from interior of the offensive line, I don't know that there's a spot where you're drafting a surefire starter in round one.
Okay. I still, like for me, the most important player on that team, bar none, for me, it's Trent Williams. And like you have to, I would want someone as his understudy for the next year and hopefully 2 years somehow, get him to play one more year after this coming year. To me, that would be the perfect situation where you literally have somebody who's learning from one of the greatest left tackles in the game.
Yeah.
And so that's where I would kind of attack. Yeah, like all kinds of good stuff. We're going to have you on more this summer as we get through 49ers season, as we get to the buildup and, you know, get into the draft and everything else. I know there's a week where James is going to take off in June, where maybe you even come up and hang out with Kyle for a little bit.
Candlestick Chronicles hits the radio airwaves.
That's right.
Man.
I think I'm going to do something silly like the buildup to free agency. So you guys are going to be like flying solo like in the week before free agency starts. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Maybe the Kings will be playing in the finals.
Yeah, that's always a possibility. Yeah, because that will take you into the second week in June. Not the third week where I'm going to take off and go to Cabo.
All right, so you'll miss a parade.
Yeah, I might have to change the Cabo plans if that's what's happening.
Can you imagine? Yeah, babe, because I've got to change the vacay. Kings out to the final somehow.
Yeah. Well, the wife would go, okay. Like, she would go with the boys and I would meet up later. Yeah, it would be the way it is. Like, she'd take our sons and potentially their friends. We'll see. Go ahead, Jesse. Oh, I thought you were going to say something.
That was me. I was just going to say it sounds like a very solid family dynamic.
Yeah, we're all good.
You're good.
Yeah, we're all good. Let's bust through this good, bad, and the ugly really quick. For me, the first thing I have for my good coming out of this game was that Keon Ellis played out of his mind. And it's not just the three-point shooting. It's the 7 rebounds, the 5 assists, the 3 blocks. I thought he was absolutely brilliant, and he's showing you the potential for him to be not only a rotational player, but maybe even the starting shooting guard next season.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Keon's been a revelation, honestly. I think he's the most positive thing to take away from the season so far.
Oh, that's it. I would agree.
Because like we talked about earlier, like when you looked at what the Kings needed at the trade deadline, they didn't go get a 3-and-D guy, but they got one internally without giving anything up, who's playing at a higher level than probably they could have expected anyone they would have gotten in a trade.
Yeah, and not only that, but they've got him locked up for pennies on the dollar for 2 more years.
Yeah.
After this year. What was your good from this game?
Mine's just Fox's 3-point shooting, and it's more zooming out to like season long and you know what it means for his career. He's taking almost 8 attempts per game, and he's shooting it at, you know, almost 37%. He shot 37.1% in his second season, but that was on 3 attempts per game, and now he's at 8. So just that efficiency has been a huge leap for his overall offensive game. And like I said, something he needs to, I think he needs to add to his game to take it to the next level is the ability to get to a free throw line, the free throw line at an even better clip.
Yeah, I think if you're able to establish yourself as De'Aaron Fox as a knockdown 3-point shooter, what that does for your game going forward, especially if you have players like Monk, if you have other pieces around you that are 3-and-D pieces that can take some of the weight off you. It just provides like how do you defend him? Like if he's, again, the 7.9 threes per game and shooting 36.7, I'll take that. I'll take that all day long. I wish his overall field goal percentage was higher like it was last year. Last year he shot 51.2, which is maybe an aberration. This year he's at 46.2. But overall, like just his play has been tremendous. And it's hard to take that next leap as a scorer to go from 25 to like close to 27. It just is. The consistency that it takes to be that guy is really ridiculous. Let's get to our bad. What do you got for bad?
Yeah, I think it's just the inability for them to score on an elite defense without Malik Monk. I think that's just super apparent. Malik's value to this team in particular is underscored by how much of an issue they have scoring against elite defenses. OKC has, like the Knicks have, like the Mavericks have, Boston has in these games that they've lost. So that to me is the main thing. They just don't have the horses right now to be able to make up for Malik Monk's absence.
I totally agree. My quick bad for the game was Harrison Barnes. He just has to play better. 1 of 8 from 3. I know he got to the free throw line, which to me was such a welcome sight. I know he had 6 rebounds, such a welcome sight. Number one, get to the free throw line every game. Number two, get a rebound every game. He's under 3 rebounds a game on the season now. And for a guy who's averaged 5 and even 6 a couple of seasons in his career, to me, it's not acceptable. Even if you do have Domantas Sabonis, it's just not acceptable. He's got to do more if he's not scoring, and he's got to do it across the board. Let's get to the ugly. What do you got for ugly?
Yeah, so I think, you know, Mike Brown always talks about, and you've heard him say this all the time, like control the controllables, effort and energy.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Kings, and I think it starts with the coaching, have let the officiating hijack their energy. Like they are so focused on the free throw disparity and, you know, the fact that that Luka Doncic outshot the Kings from the free throw line by himself in that loss a couple weeks ago. The fact that Jalen Brunson did the same thing against the Knicks. It's obviously not what you want, but it cannot be something that you're harping on in a way that I think is allowing you to get emotionally hijacked by the officiating. And yeah, the Kings never get a good whistle. And I understand it's like the officiating thing dates back a long time, and there's very good reason for it. I understand that completely. But for the Kings to get to the level they want to go, they need to listen to Mike Brown, and Mike Brown needs to listen to his own advice. Control the controllables. They cannot control the officiating.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, effort and energy, they're letting their energy get hijacked by the officiating and the fact they're not getting calls. They're a small team. They don't have guys who are great getting to the free throw line. They need to accept that fact. They have players who, I talked to De'Aaron Fox and Keegan Murray about this in New York after the Jalen Brunson game. De'Aaron Fox is not going to be a guy who baits referees into making calls. Like he talked about how he doesn't want to do that. I would argue maybe he probably should incorporate that into his game.
Be a foul grifter.
But yeah, well, not even grifting, but just having that, like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander gets the line a ton, and it's a huge part of why he's an MVP candidate, frankly. Like, it's a huge part of his offensive game, and it helps him out a lot. And that was apparent last night when he dropped 40 points on the Kings and he beats the Kings.
Yep.
So I would just say it goes twofold. Don't let the officiating bother you. Just let it be. It's going to be what it is. In the offseason, get your best offensive players to get better at getting to the line.
Okay. All right. Mine, we're going to cut this really short, though. I just said Sabonis, like he wasn't able to come up in a huge moment. 8 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists, 6 turnovers. Only 2 of 7 from the field. He should have taken them to the woodshed. That's who he has been against that team. I know there are reasons, but just a really, really not great game for Sabonis. Watched his double-double streak end at 61. All right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we're going to do a Jiffy Lube player of the game. We're going to talk about where this whole thing went wrong, and I think we probably will have a handoff today. So you're listening to The Insiders on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We'll be back in a sec. Welcome back into The Insiders on ESPN 1320. I'm James Hamm. Joining me today, Chris Biederman from the Sacramento Bee and Candlestick Chronicles. Make sure if you, wherever you're out there, check out the Candlestick Chronicles. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to give them a rating and review. Subscribe to their channel, all that good stuff.
I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, you and Kyle do good work over there.
Thank you so much. You do too with all your King stuff, of course.
Yeah, we're all over the board. Like you got to have all these different avenues now. It's just you can't just have one avenue for what you do as a sports media member anymore. Let's do something that we should have done earlier in the show, and that's give away a Jiffy Lube fast break player of the game. So if you're sitting somewhere where you can access computer, you're going to do this, but maybe Jesse can help me out here. I don't think I told promotions who the fast break player of the game is.
Do you want to text me and I can let them know, or do we want to just say it out in the air and I'll go let them know?
How about, I text you really quick and then we come back to this in like 5 minutes.
Sounds good.
Let's see.
Does it rhyme with Ian Kellis?
Yes. Okay. All right.
I hope I didn't just blow up your spot.
No, that's okay. That's okay. We are, of course, without Kyle here, We are producing on the fly, which is always fun. But hey, it's been a good week. Ham and side dishes. It's been fun, right? Let's get to the big question today that I have written in here that I don't think that the wheels have completely fallen off the bus, but I do feel like this season went wrong somewhere where we now have got to a point where I think all of us can see how good the Kings are. We can see the ceiling. Like, and that's something that I don't think that you want, like heading into a playoff or heading into a play-in where all of a sudden I sure do feel like this team is hard capped, like on who they are as a group. And partially that's because of the injuries to both Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter. But I think it's also like you see it. You see, yeah. You run up against one game after another where you're good enough to compete for half. You're good enough to compete for maybe three quarters. But there are going to be certain teams and that you can't get past. And unfortunately, some of those teams, all of those teams that you're going to struggle with, are typically playoff teams.
Yeah, I mean, so I think there are a few different ways to look at this, right? Like, if you look at the expectations coming into the season, I think the Kings over-under, according to Vegas, was 44, and they've already surpassed that with a few games left, right? So from that standpoint, it's successful. If they win their final three games, they'll have the same record they had last year. But I think what we're learning a year later is last year was a little bit different from the standpoint of, you know, in most seasons, the record they had last year, 48 and 34, is probably good for like a 5, 6, 7 seed, right? Not necessarily a 3 seed. I think their record last year spoke to how down the West was overall. And I'm not trying to take anything away from what the Kings did last year, but I think that's just a reality of it now that we're a year removed and we see how much better the West is this year than last year.
I kept saying it the whole time last year,
yeah.
Like a typical 48 win team. That's a 6 seed. It's a 7 seed.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a year where the Phoenix Suns won 48 and didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that long ago, like yeah. 7 years ago, 8 years ago.
Yeah. So I think like progression isn't always linear. And I think, you know, the Kings are now, and Mike Brown talks about this all the time, the Kings are now dealing with expectations. They're not sneaking up on anybody. And the challenge of going from bad to good is a lot easier than the challenge of going from good to great. And they're learning the hard way of how difficult it is to go from good to great. And maybe they can get there. Maybe De'Aaron Fox becomes an MVP candidate next year. Maybe Domantas Sabonis, you know, elevates his game to where you have to consider him for a first or second team NBA spot next year. And he starts scoring more, right? And he improves defensively. Maybe that happens. Maybe Keegan Murray takes a step to becoming an all-star. But this year is sort of a transition year, in my opinion. And I think the Kings hold that view. Like you talk to people with the Kings and they'll say, well, you know, you look at the Nuggets, and Nuggets didn't become contenders until years, you know, 4, 5, 6 mm-hmm. of the Michael Malone era in Denver. And the Kings are in year two of Mike Brown here. And it's still a relatively young team. So if you're trying to be positive about the Kings' long term prognosis, you could say, all right, maybe this team just gets better internally the same way, a similar way the Nuggets did when they elevated themselves to champions. Really, like, the only guy they added was Aaron Gordon. It wasn't like they brought in a whole bunch of new guys. It was mostly guys that they drafted and developed. Maybe if Keegan becomes an all-star and De'Aaron and Domas continue to elevate their games, the Kings get there. And I think that's what the Kings are banking on, that this is year two of, like, a 4, 5, 6-year-long process rather than, you know, I don't think they're going into the summer if they don't advance in the playoffs being like, oh, we got to blow it up. This seems never going to work.
Yeah, I'm hoping that that's not the case, right? You always hope, because there is a volatility to this franchise that's still there, right? That where you're hoping, hey, please don't make a giant mistake. And whether that's coaching, whether that's, you know, front office, whether whatever it is, don't make that mistake now. Like, no. Stay the course. I keep coming back to this. Like, people who remember the great era of Sacramento Kings, 8-year run where they were phenomenal. They forget that it was a 27-win team coming out in a 60-game, a shortened lockout season. It was a 44-win team in year two. Like, it wasn't until year three where they took this up to 55 games. And again, there was no Doug Christie on that first team. There was no Mike Bibby on that first team. You know, sure, you had Peja, but you had a young Peja, just like you have a young Keegan Murray, who developed into something greater. You had a veteran in Vlade Divac that like held down the fort. You had a piece in Chris Webber that you could really compare right now to De'Aaron Fox as far as like the where they stand in the league, their stardom, like who they are, all that stuff. Like all of these things, you just think it was 1 8-year stretch. Just like if you go back and you think about the 2002 Western Conference Finals, all those games bleed into each other. Mm-hmm. Right. And you start thinking about when Mike Bibby gets elbowed in the face and gets called for a foul in Kobe Bryant play, the Samaki Walker 3-pointer that shouldn't have counted at halftime, the tip out to Robert Horry, all these things kind of go into each other. And you forget that, like, realistically, Bobby Jackson didn't come till year three. And it was Tony Delk and it was Vernon Maxwell. And then you get to, you know, like, again, the Corliss for Doug trade. The team that you see in year one and year two of a typical playoff run is not the team you see in year three and year four and year five. Yeah. It's totally different. And so whether the Kings take a huge step back here, and by huge step back, I mean, they've been a playoff team all season long. If they don't make the playoffs, it's almost situational. Like, I kind of feel like even if you look at the last 2 weeks, like, I don't think they lose both teams to Dallas if Malik Monk is there. I don't think they lose a game. Well, maybe you lose to the Knicks. Maybe you don't. Maybe you lose to OKC. Maybe you don't. Maybe you lose to the Celtics. Maybe you don't. But those things, if you had Malik Monk, I don't think all of those things would have happened.
Yeah.
Like, and so I think, and if you give this team one more win, you give them two more wins. This is why we kept talking about all these crappy games early in the season where they lost to a Charlotte, they lost to a Detroit. We bring these things up all the time because it matters.
Yeah.
Like when you get to this point, they're literally a game behind the Phoenix Suns for the number 7 seed. They're 2 games behind the Pelicans for the number 6 seed. They're right there, but they're also just barely above these other two teams. And part of it's because you failed in moments that you couldn't early in the season.
And I think, like, more so than what the Kings can do from in terms of, like, adding guys, like, the Kings are not going to win a championship unless De'Aaron Fox just becomes that dude. Like, there's no number of moves that Monty McNair could feasibly make that make the Kings a championship roster that doesn't include De'Aaron just taking it to a Hall of Fame level, right? So that to me is the most important thing, is that, like, is the Kings' best players continue to elevate their games and then become some of the best players in the conference, because that's the most reasonable path to getting to contention.
No, I think it's a really good point what you bring up. And not only that, I think the other point is you have to continue to support those players in the right way. So
yeah,
it's not just saying, hey, De'Aaron Fox has to do this to carry the team. It's, well, the team also has to do this, this, and this to support him in a way that allows him to become that player. Because as of right now, I think you've kind of capped what you can do with him until you, again, you add a Keon Ellis that does what he does and has that impact and allows him to not play defense on the toughest defender, on the toughest offensive player every single night, that you have other players that can, you know, set screens and do things like Domantas Sabonis does. We got Kenny Caraway coming in for the handoff. This is awesome.
What's up, dude?
What up, baby? How you doing, man? Let me turn my mic on. There we go. There we go.
Let's add you here. Kenny, before we do that, we have to give away our Jiffy Lube Fast Break Player of the Game.
Sure.
It was my fault. I forgot to call. Forgot to walk down to promotions and give them a name today. So if you're out there in the wild, go to ESPN1320.com right now. There's a big, giant Jiffy Lube logo sitting right there for a contest. Click on that and enter to win. You're entering to win not only a $100 gift certificate to Jiffy Lube, which is amazing. We're running low. We had 82 of these things to give away at the beginning of the season. We only got, I think, counting this one, 4 left. But also, on top of that, you're entering to win a Sacramento Kings jersey. We have one of those left to give away that we're going to do right after the season. So the password for today is, of course, to me it was clear, the Jiffy Lube player of the game was Keon Ellis. So go Again, to ESPN 1320, type in Keon Ellis. Two words, K-E-O-N-E-L-L-I-S, Keon Ellis. That is your Jiffy Lube Fast Break Player of the Game.
There we go.
What's going on, man? How are you over there?
Oh, man, I'm all right. I'd be doing a lot better if they would have pulled out that win last night.
Yeah.
That was tough. That was tough, man. And I'm going to talk about it a little bit on the show, but a lot on the show. We got 4 hours. But
you do have 4 hours.
But
glad I don't have 4 hours today.
I know a lot of people are upset with blowing that lead and the amount of threes they took and everything. Last night, to be honest with you, after that game, I felt bad for those guys. I felt bad for them because we can nitpick losing a lead and all this other stuff and the threes. I thought they played their asses off last night. I thought they really worked to try and get that game. And however they had to do it is however they felt they had to do it. But, man, they really played their asses off last night. And it's tough when you see a team play that hard. And they're undermanned. We always forget that. Undermanned team was trying to go into the team that maybe the record-wise ended up being the best team in the Western Conference and tried to steal one last night. And they were this close. They didn't get it done. And I'm not telling anybody how to feel about it, but as a competitor, as a, you know, athlete who's been in those shoes, I saw them working. I saw them grinding last night to try and get one. And they just came up short last night. And that was tough. I felt bad for those guys, man.
Yeah, I think the 1-3 trip, it's going to come back. It'll be like etched on their gravestone. Mm-hmm. This is the one that they got away, but I think we saw it against the Knicks. They were highly competitive. Mm-hmm. We saw it against the Celtics, whether you believe what happened against the Celtics or not. Like, I'm not one who prescribes to, you know, a team that basically sits everybody in the final 7 minutes. You go on a 21-2 run, whatever it was. It still showed the heart that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, this game where, again, you're just right there and you just don't have enough. And we have people who, like, don't believe in the coaching or don't believe in this or that. Like, look, man, what are you supposed to do when you throw Colby Jones out there? And this is not a knock on Colby Jones. Mm-hmm. He played great against Boston. He even played really well, you know, in between. Like, he's played really well. But at the same time, you're counting on somebody who is a rookie second-round pick who hasn't played the entire season. He's been with the Stockton Kings most of the entire season. But that's what you're down to mm-hmm. at this moment. And I don't know, Chris, what do you think about how Mike has sort of handled the adversity here? Because I think that's, Mike always talks about adversity, and he's the one who is dealing with adversity as much as anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, no matter how this season goes, like, to me, this is going to be a growing experience. Like, if the Kings get to the promised land next year, 2 years, 3 years down the line, we'll be able to look back at this season, and a few guys in particular, maybe Colby Jones, maybe he evolves into a core rotational piece on a really good contending team, mm-hmm. right? We will look at this season as, hey, this team grew a lot here. Like, this group grew a lot here going through adversity. Because, like I said earlier, like, as much as last year was a giant step for them organizationally, there wasn't a whole lot of adversity that they dealt with. Like, the adversity was, like, the organization not being to the playoffs in 16 years. But that's not really weighing on the players because they haven't been here for 16 years. Mm-hmm. Like, they haven't been the ones who have been coming up short. A lot of those guys have been here only a handful of years. Like, the adversity they dealt with wasn't really tangible. This year, they're dealing with tangible adversity with Trey Lyles missing time, with Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter missing time. So, like, they're going through that, and it's what Mike says all the time. Like, you know, the Nuggets, he cites Nikola Jokic saying, basically, like, you have to go through stuff in order to get to a level where you can achieve what you want to achieve. And the Kings are going through stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, can they get to that level that they want to get to, that the Nuggets got to? That remains to be seen, but this is an important step in their development, I think, no matter how the season turns out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, man. And like I said, you know, they had an opportunity. You know, they were up 20, and they had an opportunity to win that game. I know people talk about, you know, the Kings aspect of it, of like how they're going to blow a lead and all this other stuff. That was one aspect of it. In my mind, I was like, all right, well, OKC ain't going to let it. They ain't going to lose by 20.
Their defense was, like, incredible in the second half.
OKC going to turn up. Shea going to turn up. Like, that's going to happen. The Kings are going to have to be able to weather that, and hopefully they can still get a W. But they act like they just playing the blind sisters of the poor, and they was going to let it be 20. Like, OKC a good team. You know what I mean? So It was a terrible, terrible loss last night. That was a gut punch and a number of gut punches in the last month or so.
Okay, so the thing I would point out to you is, like, it's not just the Kings, right? This is the NBA. The West is brutal. Mm-hmm. The NBA as a whole right now is so incredibly talented, and what we're seeing, like, I was looking at the box scores. I was looking at the ticker last night, and I'm like, okay, that score can't be real. The Phoenix Suns, who are in the exact same position the Kings are in, the exact same position, they trailed 37-10 after one quarter last night.
That was crazy.
37-10. And Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, Grayson Allen, and Drew Eubanks. Like, you can take Drew Eubanks and whether he can play or not, like, that doesn't matter. The fact is, that's who their starting five was. Mm-hmm. They got mollywopped. And then, you know what? The final score, they were down at one point. It was like 53-something. It was like 53-13 or something. It was like outlandish. They trailed by 37 points, the Suns did. And they ended up losing by 13. Mm. So that shows you that, like, look, the NBA, like, leads come and go. Mm-hmm. 37 down to 13. Like they come and go. And so we don't want to talk about it like it's, oh, it's the Kings keep blowing 20-point leads. It's the omen of death. They're up by 20. You're done.
Mark Daigneault said something in his post-game press conference last night that I hadn't even thought of, which I thought was fascinating. It was a 27-point swing last night, right, from the Kings leading by 20 to OKC winning by 7, right? Mm-hmm. So 27-point swing. Like, the average – Mark Daigneault said the average swing in an NBA game is like 20, 22 points. Hmm. So, like, those swings just happen all the time. And so it's just a matter of managing them, you know, like, throughout the year. You just got to learn to manage them, which is why I keep harping on Kings need to get to the free throw line to stop those runs.
No, it's totally true.
I mean,
what do you guys got coming up on the show?
Another situation. We'll talk about that. I mean, the man shot 20 damn free throws. Yeah. Fox didn't take his first free throw to the fourth quarter.
That's true.
The hell's going on here? So we'll talk about more about that, though. We'll talk about Kings, man. That's what's going on today. There's a lot to dissect. They got that Hoops Hype article with Sabonis talking about Monk, and Monk talking to Hoops Hype about, you know, his future. So we'll get into those as well. But, damn, Kings lost one, man. That's tough.
Tough one. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. We'll be back tomorrow. We have Jake Gaden from CBS 13.
Jake!
So we'll be back. Ham and side dishes, what we're calling this week. Thanks to Chris Biederman from the Sacramento Bee, and of course Candlestick Chronicles for jumping on. You have a good time?
Yeah, I had a great time, man. This kind of flew by. Appreciate you having me.
Go Blue. All right.
So we got D-Lo and Casey coming up next. You've been listening to the Insiders on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. See you in a little while.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.